Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the special meeting Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015 of the City of Morro Bay's Harbor Advisory Board. Welcome. And as I look around here, we do have a quorum. So what I'd like to do now is have a moment of silence. And with that moment, then, I'd like to stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so the next item would be public comment. Considering the fact we have no one here in the audience, I don't think there will be any public comment. So as I notice here in the agenda, Eric, there is no place for announcements or anything like that. So I guess we aren't able to do that, right?
Correct. This is a special meeting.
Okay.
It has a
That's fine.
Limited agenda.
Okay. So without any further ado, let's go to the first item on the agenda, which is the review of the Harbor Department Rules and Regulations and the Morro Bay Municipal Code Chapter 13 for the Harbor Advisory Board. So with this, I'm going to hand this over to Eric. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and welcome back, everybody, for this special July meeting. I appreciate everybody being here. I know it. We originally were shooting for Monday and Tuesday this week, but booking this room got a little difficult, so we ended up here. So I'm glad everybody made it, and hopefully, without all the other things on the normal agenda, hopefully we can get through this pretty quickly. So, as you stated, Mr. Chairman, we've got our final review of the Harbor Department Rules and Regulations and Municipal Code, and this is probably the largest subject line in the history of Harbor Advisory Board. But we're down to what we're calling the A-list items. As you know, we had a list of I think 16 odd items, categorized them into categories that made sense, and looked at these in three different categories. We had a B list and a C list that we went through. We're going through the A list now. The A list is the environmental issues. They were numbers 9, 10, 13, 14 on the original list of 16, so I'll follow the same format. We've got an issue outlined and what the current code is and some additional information, which is kind of my staff analysis or my discussion, and then some recommendations. And again, in the end of all this, once we put all this together, we'll get back to the A-list and B-list items. I'll sharpen my pencil and we'll put all the Harbor Advisory Board recommendations and all other staff input together into a suite of actual suggested changes into the rules and regulations document and bring back a draft document at some point, and municipal code changes where the municipal code stuff fits for a final Harbor Advisory Board review. And then once we get your input on that, we'll go back to the office and finalize our documents and then get it to City Council for approval. Hopefully, I'm going to say sometime this fall. This has been a fairly long process, as you know. Fairly complicated, but important. It's a lot of big items here, and we don't go into the rules and regulations in the municipal code in a willy-nilly manner on a regular basis just because. So we're looking at it and taking a good holistic approach and catching it all here at once. So it'll be a good update for the whole code. And if new things come up, obviously we can probably at that last meeting that we have where we do a review of a final draft, if some new things have come up, I'll bring those to your attention as well. So we may see a few new things come up. So with that, we'll go into the items individually here. With your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I think probably we'll go through each one individually, get it put to bed, draw a conclusion one way or another, and move on to the next.
Sounds good.
Since we have no public comment, I would have suggested we take public comment on each one to keep the flow smooth, but we don't need to do that unless somebody's watching here in TV land and they're going to come in. But we'll see what happens. So the first issue, prohibiting the careening of vessels on the sand spit except in emergencies. As everybody probably knows, we have 6 to 8 foot tidal flows here at times, and we've got a lot of mud flats, and oftentimes folks have gone out into the mud flats and probably in the not so distant past, but I don't think it's the case anymore. People do full-on bottom jobs out there in the mudflats and scrape their bottoms and sand and paint and you know, do what really should be done in a boatyard. In recent years, it hasn't occurred as often. It still occurs. I think it's more on an emergency basis in more recent times because we have cracked down on folks out there when we do see them out there because we can't just let them run free and do whatever they want out on the sand spit or on the mudflats. So it has ramped back, but still I think it's an issue out there. And while we have no current prohibition or anything in our rules and regulations or Muni Code addressing it, we do have prohibitions on discharging of pollutants and other things into the bay, but we feel that because of our Clean Marina certification and increased environmental awareness and environmental stewardship, we should put something on the books that prohibits cleaning of vessels for repair and maintenance except in emergencies or something urgent. You blow a valve on a through hole, a hose comes off, something drastic happens, you got to pull your prop shaft out because your shaft seal leaks and you can't get to a boatyard. Something that requires you to more of an emergency or real urgent issue that would likely result in a pollution or sinking or something more drastic if action isn't taken. So with that, I'll open it up to the board and see where we go with this.
Okay. Maybe we start here with Ron. Do you have any comments or any questions or any thing to discuss on this subject?
I have no questions. I do have one quick comment. The staff report defines careening as allowing a vessel to lay on its side on the bottom to do work, and I might respectfully suggest that we include the concept of or beach on the bottom or the beach, lest the public be not fully informed.
Great point, duly noted. We can make sure that it's not so narrow or myopic that it just addresses one particular point or spot, but yeah, we can make sure that it covers all areas and types of activities. In fact, well, probably the best place to be in the definitions, which we went through. I think that was the first thing we went through, was our list of definitions. We could put it in the definitions, careening, and define what careening means.
Anything else, Ron?
No.
Dana?
Yeah, that just brings up something. And there is a piling over in what we call Sandals Cove, and you can actually go up and tie up to it and just let the tide go down, and you sit on your keel for monohulls. And so you're not laying over. But I guess you would be beaching, and I guess that would fit under that. But there is that one situation that goes on, that can go on.
Yeah, I think that goes back to what Ron brought up. So
I guess that would be under beaching.
Yeah, we'll make sure it's broad enough that...
Yeah, that's only the one area.
It isn't a boat laying on its side. Well, my boat's not laying on its side. I can make it stand up. Yeah, we'll make sure it covers range of things.
And then I have one question. As far as the Harbor Department, do you get people, boaters, that come in and ask, is it okay, and how do I go about it, or anything like that? Is there instructions given, or is that something that even comes up?
Most folks, I think, ask now. In the past, probably not so much when it happened a little more widely, but in most cases, I think folks ask. If it's something urgent, they'll push over. And we've had those on occasion in the last few years. But most of them come in and ask or let us know, hey, I'm going to go do this. And we say, hey, you can't get anything in the water. You're not prohibited from doing it, but you got to keep everything out of the water. And we, at this point, we're telling them, don't be scraping. Don't be sanding, don't be painting. This is really for, an emergency or something urgent that you have to do. It's not for routine maintenance. And pretty much everyone's been pretty compliant about it.
Okay. Neil?
I just have one question about the language. When it's at the very end here of your recommendation, where pollution will be highly unlikely in the repair and access to the boatyard is not available on a timely basis, questioning if, are you guys concerned about the vagueness of that, or do you guys want to have the discretion to judge what's timely and what access to the boatyard is?
I think my intent there was, right now we've got one very small and very limited boatyard. hopefully, knock on wood, maybe we'll hear a little bit more later, we'll end up with a full-size boatyard that if somebody with the 45-foot salmon trawler has a major problem, they can get to the boatyard and they can get hauled out on an emergency basis, and this won't be an issue, although those boats typically aren't beaching themselves, but I could see one possibly doing it. So, no, I think having it, I guess vague is the word, I don't like that word vague, but having it undefined enough so that it gives us some ability to judge on what may or may not be, just because it's hard to define, like any emergency or any incident, it's hard to put a definition on some things, and you're best left things with discretion of staff and personnel.
Okay, I have no questions. Lynn?
Yes, I do have a question. What is the harm of careening the boat as long as they don't scrape or sand and put stuff in the water?
If, assuming you're careening or beaching, you're not going there just because you want to go there and watch your boat lay on the side. You're going there to do some maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And the potential for getting pollutants of some sort, any sort, into the water is very high when you're laying in your boat on the side and trudging around in the mud. It's not a... I understand your question or your point, but It's a less than controlled environment in which things can go wrong quickly, and it's hard to contain anything when you're out there in the mud or sand.
I disagree, but...
Ron?
So, Lynn, what's... describe some circumstances that you think would, where careening or beaching would be desirable and that no potential pollution would take place, just so I understand your point a little bit better, please.
Well, I suppose there's always the potential if you are laying over on the side that something, oil from the engine could spill out, highly unlikely, fuel tank could leak or something of that nature. But I've done that, not here. But I have done that, and to check some barnacles, why was it? To get something, it wasn't, I had a prop problem. But it wasn't urgent, but it was something that I wanted to do, and it happened to be convenient. And I don't think there was any harm done in that situation. So I don't know why we should prohibit things that are not harmful. Just because, you know, there's something that might happen.
Okay. Joe?
I've got nothing.
Gene?
A couple questions. Sandals Cove is privately owned. That property is private. Does that create a problem at all?
There's still private property lots over there, and Gene, you probably know better than any, and there's still, and the rest of it's city-owned. If indeed Sandals Cove is a chunk of private property, I could see that, even though that private property owner is probably never going to be able to do very much with that. Mm-hmm. It's still their private property. There's been allowed free and unfettered access to that private property for decades. I don't know what the law says about prescriptive easements and all that kind of stuff, but I suppose there's a potential liability or an ownership issue there. What exactly it is, I don't know.
Okay. Another couple questions. If you had a monohull and you needed some work on your spreader, I've seen boats pull over along the side and careen or beach and then tip their boat over the side and work on their spreaders. I don't see any harm in that. And the fact is, I don't see any more harm on cleaning the bottom of your boat as opposed to having a diver scrape the bottom of your boat. They're knocking off barnacles with bottom feed all the time. So, just some comments.
Well, in the regulations, doesn't it state that no careening that causes damage? So, I mean, won't that preclude that if you want to careen, if you go to the Harbor Department, Lynn or Gene, and say, I'm going to go do this, then you would allow it because you're not going to harm the environment? I mean, so I was just thinking about that.
But it says, number 9, the title, prohibiting careening of vessels on the sandspit except in emergencies.
Okay. Well, I think we do have some discussion and some disagreement in the terminology careening and whether or not it's harmful or not. Gene?
Well, we already have regulations that say that you can't discharge any pollutant in the bay. So I don't know whether we need another regulation. I understand that we're trying to be a clean harbor and things like that, but we already have regulations, and I hate to over-regulate.
Ron?
Yeah, I would just like to say that both of you are responsible boat owners and know how to do these things, but that is not reflective of the general public of boat owners, I would say. We get people that just got a boat, and they go over and careen. And I see it all the time. I've seen it happen a number of times. And, you know, sometimes if they're just doing repairs and they pull it off, that's great. When they go over there and they scrape, and they paint, it is a national estuary, and we have a responsibility to keep it, the pollutants out of the water. There's also other things. There's sea life. I mean, right now, you could go over there, and there's a zillion sand dollars, live ones. They're purple. They stand on edge. They're not the ones that you pick up on the beach.
Yeah, I know.
And they're doing, and this time of year, if you go lay your boat over there, you just wipe out, you know, 1,000 of them. So, I mean, I'm okay with this. I think it's headed in the right direction. I think there's enough leeway here that the Harbor Department and, you know, you can. The reason we allow it in the first place is because we don't have the facilities to handle all the boats in this bay, and so that's why it's allowed in the first place in a national estuary. In a clean marina environment that we're trying to keep intact.
So, Dana, why is cleaning the bottom of your boat while it's in the water allowed? Is there no problem there?
Well, you know, I'm not bringing that up. It's not on here. But, yeah, you know, because then, you know, then that's a whole other bag of worms. And I'm not going to go there right now.
Okay, so I see maybe we should take a voice vote on whether or not we should continue.
Wait, we have more.
Oh, Ron, I'm sorry.
Actually, I would propose that there be a motion on the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Ron.
So move that a prohibition on careening of vessels for repair and maintenance be enacted in Morro Bay, except in the case of emergencies, I didn't include the word extreme, such as a failed through-hull fitting, comma, where pollution will be highly unlikely in the emergency, that's an inclusion, repair, and access to a boatyard is not available on a timely basis, period. And I'm going to add a sentence, because we can get into this in discussion, and I'm prepared to take it off or whatever, or, comma, in the event of a short-term maintenance event of not more than one tide change with no pollution potential.
Oh, that's good.
Motion on the floor. Anyone second it?
I'll second.
We have a first and a second. Hearing any discussion? Gene?
No.
Joe?
No.
Lynn?
I would have kind of a problem with no potential for pollution. I don't know if that's possible.
Would you like to use the same word that's in the previous sentence, which is unlikely?
Unlikely would be much better.
Okay. I'm prepared to amend.
Okay. Ron has amended his motion to put in the word unlikely. Do you second that, Dana?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. Lynn, anything else?
Actually, the word would be no likely. Sorry, not un, with no likely pollution potential.
Yeah.
I still second that amendment.
No further comment.
Neil?
No comment.
Danny, do you have anything to say?
No, I'm good.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Hearing no comment, all in favor of the motion passing, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. We have one opposed and 6-4. Is that correct? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, Eric, next.
Okay, next. Thank you. That went okay. another vessel repair addressing issue here. Again, vessel VMPs, best management practices, clean marine guidelines, whatnot, stipulating that maintenance repair done on a vessel be limited in its scope. And again, further on in the staff analysis, that we have very limited boatyard facilities, it's hard to enforce this one in that, you know, if Lynn wants to go haul her boat and do a major job, she doesn't have a boatyard here. It's so convenient. So taking that into mind, a best management practice to limit maintenance projects on a vessel. And this isn't any, like the careening one in a maintenance, you know, what is an event that's unlikely to have potential for pollution, or you can't define every single thing. But in general, the general guideline is that if you're doing a project on your boat and it involves more than 25% of the vessel's surface above the waterline, you should be doing that in a boatyard. And again, it's up to a matter of interpretation. What's 25%? And, you know, if you're sanding and scraping and painting the whole surface of the boat, the whole deck and the house and everything else, and you're a 45-foot fishing boat, that's a pretty expansive project. If you're doing a 10-square-foot patch because something's rusted out, that a little smaller scope. So the idea being that you don't get beyond 25% more or less of a given surface area of the boat. Currently, we have no regulation or code that prohibits that sort of thing. Or limits you to any specific amount of work you can do. But again, like the careening of vessels, there is a prohibition of discharge of any kind of pollutants, whether they're sanding, dust, or oil, or anything into the water. With our one small boatyard in town, it's pretty limited on what vessels can do and haul here. And we're recommending that without a full-service boatyard, again, hopefully, knock on wood, we get a full-service boatyard in the foreseeable future. That we don't codify this as a requirement, but it remains a BMP recommendation in requiring extra measures to mitigate larger projects such as tenting and tarping are recommended to be codified as a compliance requirement, meaning if you're going to do a big sanding project, you tent it. Vacuum sanders, obviously the Fishermen's Organization and NEP have been great at getting those available to everybody, so we're all helping do our part, but we don't feel that codifying this 25% maximum at this time without a full-size boatyard that can accommodate most boats here is appropriate, but we do feel that other mitigation measures to minimize the potential for pollutants reaching the bay or the waters should be. So with that, I'll open it up.
Okay. I'll start over here with Gene. Do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, I just think this is an overregulation, and I won't approve it.
Okay. He will not.
Can you repeat that? I didn't hear it.
I feel that this is an overregulation, and I won't support it.
Joe?
I'd have to agree with Gene there. There's you know, painting above the water line, sanding, all that kind of stuff. It's something that you do before you go to the boatyard. The boatyard is extremely expensive, and it's actually really hard to do work on the top of the boat with scaffolding and ladders and all that kind of good stuff. So I can't really get behind it either.
Lynn?
I agree with Joe and Jean that even if you were going to do it in the water, you could use the vacuum and you can do some tarping to minimize any pollutants, and that would be sufficient.
Okay. And Neil?
The idea of 25%, you know, is a good rule of thumb, but I know that there's other jobs that can be a smaller percentile that could have a greater impact. So I think instead of just lumping in a percentage, it might be based on the potential hazards. And I know we have codes that prevent contamination and pollution, but I'm not sure if we've not had the ability to enforce them. I've had certain boat work, and I'm not trying to limit all boat work. I think some stuff's necessity that can happen on the boat, but as you pointed out, not all boaters are responsible boaters and comply, and I think having the sanders and any other methods that can be looked at for helping with any kind of in-slip repairs or repairs that are done on moorings as people are building boats or painting boats, if we don't adopt a 25% rule, if there's other things that could be put into place, and I'd like to open that up to discussion or include this in the discussion, as I don't have all the answers, but just I know that some jobs can be small but also have a large impact, and 25% rule might not capture that. So that's
okay.
My addition.
Daniel?
Yeah, I'm in favor of the premise here. But I think the premise is involved a lot in this next item, which is the best management practices, and the 25% is kind of a guideline. It's really hard to how do you say this is 25% of it? But I don't have a big problem with this. I don't think it's over-regulating. I think it's time that we took care of a lot of the environmental problems that we have going on, and this is just stuff that hasn't been in the rules, and so I'm okay with this, but I do think that a lot of this is in the next item in strengthening the best management practices.
Okay, Ron?
This is an opinion. Any responsible port, harbor, or inhabited body of water needs to have best management practices in place, and they need to be codified. And as the Harbor Department points out in the staff report, at the moment, Morro Bay doesn't have such a thing. So to me, it isn't a matter of more or less regulation. It's a matter of in 2015, in the world we live in 2015, especially in the state of California, people need guidelines, and some folks need pretty clear guidelines. So I don't have a problem with including in best management practices, which, as Dana points out, is actually the next agenda item, something along the lines, as it relates to this particular number 10, a recommendation that effective containment of the repair area with no contamination of Morro Bay waters as a direct result of the repair be required. Also that all repair-related debris collected and disposed of on land. Doesn't say you can't do it. It just says, hey, you got to contain, you got to control. And that would be in the BMPs, which we're not to yet.
So you're thoughts and comments are to eliminate, as Neil stated, the 25% rule and just kind of put in you know, containment, no pollutants as a general concept?
Well, the staff recommendation says that, actually recommends that this particular BMP not be codified as a requirement, but remain a BMP recommendation. So there's an opportunity when we get to the BMPs to craft a recommendation that the board is, that the board is comfortable with.
I see. Okay. So with that, I'm too okay with this. I mean, as I say, I think it's as Ron stated, people do need rules and regulations, unfortunately. If you do want to do work and you're a responsible boat owner, you know, Lynn, as you are, you can go to the Harbor Department and say, this is what I'm going to do. And I don't think there's going to be any problem with it. So I am too okay with this. So does anyone, I'm sorry, Lynn?
Then maybe we could just classify it as education instead of regulation and encourage people to use those practices and educate them about those practices.
Thoughts on that? Ron?
Some time ago, when we started this process, I spent some time researching BMPs from other harbors and ports and so on, and there's quite a few of them published. And to make Lynn's point, some of them were regulatory. Some BMPs were regulatory, and some were advisory. And it was sort of on a case-by-case basis. And I mean, a municipality or a port or harbor entity on a case-by-case basis as to whether they were or were not. So my only point is that there is a precedent for them being advisory or educational, if you choose, and the time to discuss that is with the next agenda item.
So what do we want to do with number 10 here? Do we want to leave it as is? Is there a motion on the table? Okay.
So I'm fine leaving it. I mean, I think the approach for at least the direction that seems to be going is we don't have to take a motion and do something hard and fast on each one. In my recommendation, I stated
right.
That not be codified this time, but requiring extra measures that we spoke about, tenting, taking going the extra mile to make sure things don't get in the water, should be listed in the BMPs, and we push that off into the BMP section next. I think that works fine.
Okay.
If the board's comfortable with that.
I am. Okay. So why don't we continue on, Eric? Number 13.
Okay. Number 13, adding, strengthening best management practices.
Gene, I'm sorry. Did you have something?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't want to see any pollutants in the bay or anything like that. We've already got rules and regulations, and the best management practices are clean marine guidelines. And I don't have any problem with that. I just don't want to see, we've got rules and regulations. Let's just don't over-regulate.
Okay.
All we have is don't pollute. That's all we have.
Dana?
I'm sorry. We don't, that's what this is all about. We don't really have regulations. Each item here says we don't have anything in place at this time. And that's why we're trying to put something together. So those best management practices that we have listed, which we're talking about next, would be those rules.
I just disagree with you, Dana. Under current rules and codes, although no vessel project on Morro Bay waters can discharge pollution to the bay under several local, state, and federal codes.
Right. That's what I said. I said
okay.
All we have right now is says don't pollute. But we don't have any guidelines. This is kind of the education right here. You say don't pollute, and it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm just using my sander. I'm not, that stuff's okay. And so we're being more specific with the best management practices.
Okay, well, let's just, you know, I think it's okay to disagree. Let's continue to move forward here on 13 and see where we end up. Okay?
All right, so we'll, so the one carried over, the limited amount of repairs, at least taking extra measures to ensure that you're doing everything possible to minimize the potential of pollution, whether it's a tenting or a vacuum sander bag or putting booms around in the water or whatever, to minimize the potential of pollution. So that one carries over. And again, as was just brought up, you know, we have no specific prohibitions of or guidelines or directives on certain activities. It's just don't pollute in the water. The idea of being here, if I can add a little more information, is that we want to go a step further. We believe we should go a step further, and then let's, you may call it over-regulation, but the need to put measures in place that ensures that people aren't doing things that have a high propensity to do that. I mean, that's the idea for some of these things. It's not, you know, shut everything down and push everybody off into a boatyard or send them somewhere else. It's make sure that we're not doing things that have a high potential for causing pollution or damage to the environment. Even though you may think you're doing it right, things happen. If you put these additional measures in place, it acts as a safeguard to try and prevent some of those things from happening. So some of these things, BMPs, this is kind of a catch-all list, and I'll, if I don't bring it up, remind me to bring up boat bottom cleaning because we touched on that earlier. This is kind of a catch-all list of BMPs that are out there in the world. As Ron said, you know, there's a lot of ports and harbors that have adopted these, the State Fish and Game and California Coastal Commission and a lot of Coastal Conservancy and other agencies up and down the coast and statewide have promulgated these things, and they're all out there, and you know, there's a lot of good information out there, and making sure that that's codified or that's in our requirements for folks to do just gives it more backing and gives it more teeth in the long run. So some of those things are mandatory use of vacuum bag sanders. As I spoke earlier, the NEP and the Fishermen's Organization were great in putting together a mini-grant proposal to the NEP and getting two vacuum sanders available for use for anybody. It's not just for fishermen. We've had those things are in constant use. I'm probably going to say, I don't know, there's rarely a week goes by that somebody's not either turning one in or checking one out. They're used a lot, and they're great pieces of equipment, and hopefully we can get a couple more, because eventually these ones are going to wear out and get more available out there. So mandatory use of vacuum bag sanders. That an oil absorbent pad or pill be kept in a vessel's bilge bilge area subject to engine and fuel leaks at all times. I know some folks throw those pads or pillows in there when they have leaks, only to mop things up. Some municipalities or some marinas up and down the coast require people to keep them in their bilge all the time. I know that can potentially be a safety hazard with automatic float switches and whatnot, potentially getting interfered with, but that's more of a case-by-case basis that those sorts of things can be dealt with. But we'd recommend that that everybody keep a pad or pillow in their bilge at all times and swap it out. We have a pad exchange program through the county, IWMA, that's great, that folks bring in their soiled pads or pillows, and we'll come in and exchange them for free ones, so it's a no-cost thing. Only use of phosphate-free and biodegradable non-toxic products, and use the minimum amount at all times for cleaning and other gray water type discharges. While most of the phosphate containing detergents are probably gone these days, I don't think there's too many more around, it's still a good BMP to put in place, and biodegradable and non-toxic, and use the minimum amount possible. That oil absorbent pads or other containment devices be used around fuel nozzles when fueling. Some folks are pretty good about it. Some fuel docks now have devices or pads that they hand to every boater when they do it. Some of them don't. And requiring it just strengthens that possibility of, or eliminating the possibility of fuel getting in the water. Prohibition of application of any soaps or detergents or emulsifiers, that's already a federal law. You can't, if you spill some fuel in the water, you can't throw detergent on it. But if that occurs, if somebody's working on their fuel system and they pump a bunch of fuel overboard accidentally or on purpose, and they go grab the joy soap and start squirting it off, City of Morro Bay, I can't enforce on that. That's a federal water law, clean water law. If it was a local law, I could. We recommend putting in something like that. Prohibition of fueling in slips and piers or other locations without proper equipment or at permitted fuel docks. I know there's probably some folks out there that, although the fuel dock doesn't include the road tax. It should be cheaper than road fuel. I don't think it always is, and sometimes folks are tempted to go out and buy diesel fuel and put it in their boats, and they're carrying jerry jugs or they're fueling it, you know, off the side of their boat or in their slips, and the possibility for spillage there is pretty darn high because it's not a very controlled environment. So we'd recommend that boats shouldn't be fueling in their slips unless, you know, again, it's sort of like the careening, unless it's an emergency or some hardship or some extenuating circumstance. All materials and products used in day-to-day operations shall be stored indoors and in covered containers and dock boxes somewhere other than out on deck. I know most folks are usually pretty good about keeping things indoors, but not always. And if if covered containers are used outdoors, they should be secured and watertight and moved indoors when not in use. And anything open, any kind of open containers, should have some sort of secondary containment. That can be something as simple as a box or a 1 gallon paint can sitting in a 5 gallon plastic bucket, and that's where your work out of the 5 gallon plastic bucket in case something gets knocked over, as you know. Accidents happen. So little things like that can go a long way in the long run. Pet waste, properly disposed of, not allowed to accumulate on vessels, docks, slips, or piers. We generally don't have too much of a problem on our docks and piers. We do have some vessels out there with animals on them that have become pollution problems from time to time, and stuff is allowed to accumulate. Until it ends up in the water, not a heck of a lot we can do about it. But if we had a regulation like this, it would give us another tool to enforce and make sure that stuff isn't sitting on decks. Because as you know, Neil, you're super sensitive to this sort of thing in the water. And when that stuff's laying around on deck, you know, it doesn't take much for it to roll off. And I don't want to get graphic, but it doesn't take much for it to roll off and end up in the water. All solid, liquid, and hazardous waste properly and legally disposed of. You'd think that would be a no-brainer. But again, it's another one of those BMPs that's adopted up and down the coast. And then the specific prohibition of fish waste disposal in any city waters. Currently, again, the catch-all Morbay Muni Code says that you can't really throw anything in the water, any kind of waste, whether it's a pollutant, whether it's you're half an eaten hamburger, anything. You're not supposed to throw any kind of material into the water, solid, liquid, or otherwise. But a specific prohibition of fish waste, because a lot of people are under the impression, oh, it's just a couple of fish, that shouldn't harm thrown over the side. Well, when enough people throw fish over the side, it does become a the bioavailability of oxygen and the decomposition of a mass accumulation of fish waste on the bottom becomes a problem. So we'd recommend a specific prohibition of fish waste disposal in city waters. With that, I'll stop talking and let you guys go at it.
So, Eric, you made an interesting comment regarding, this was a federal law, and that because it's not on the municipal code or it's not codified, you were unable to enforce it. So, all these codes or all these things that we just mentioned here seem pretty common sense, but so you're saying to us that if these were as best management practice on our books here, you'd have a little bit more flexibility in your toolbox to actually enforce them, and now you cannot do that because they're not on the books? I'm just kind of throwing that out a little bit to
In a general sense. I won't say in every single case.
Right,
they're all
right.
Different, but yeah, it gives us more flexibility and more ability to enforce, and that enforcement could be, advising and warning, but at least it gives us the backing up of that hammer where we've got a local code where I'd have to bring in the Coast Guard or State Fish and Game to enforce on it because they've got the authority. I'll back up a little bit. We, as the city of Morro Bay, can enforce anything in the municipal code, and we have a limited ability to enforce things in the state harbors and navigation code, but that's it. Federal law? Nope. I can call the Coast Guard. I can advise people, and we can threaten people that, hey, we're going to call the Coast Guard if you don't take care of this, but it takes the Coast Guard or Fish and Game or another agency to come in on some of these cases.
Okay, thank you. All right, Gene, I'll start down at your end again.
Okay. Eric, on the prohibit of fueling in slips, Is there any way to modify that so that somebody with a 3-gallon can of gas is filling their outboard motor, and they could put on a diaper around it or something like that to prevent any additional spills if that happens? I can't tell you how many people in the bay have skiffs that don't go to the fuel dock to fuel up, and they just go to the service station and get, you know, three gallons of gas and put it in.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and even we've struggled with this one because we fuel our jet skis. Well, I did. I mean, I'm not going to hide from it.
Well, let me ask you a question before you comment, Eric. I mean, as you just you made another statement earlier regarding that the cost from the fuel dock should be lower than the gas station. So if that's the case, okay. So excuse me.
In theory, it should, because the vehicle, the off-road fuel, off-highway fuel, which is farm equipment and vessels, the red-dyed diesel, doesn't have the road tax, which is, I don't know how many cents, but it's quite a bit. And so in theory, it should be lower, but because of our location, and I won't go into the politics of it, but largely because of our location, it's the high cost of fuel to get it here. It isn't generally cheaper, but... Gene, your point, I mean, it's one I've struggled with just because of what I mentioned, but I would think most small boaters like you and others that have the skiff with the plastic jug, you're going to throw that in the back of your truck or car and you're going to go to the gas station, but not always, and fuel it there rather than bring a jug to fuel it somewhere else. The ones that concern us from the pollution standpoint are large tank-based operations where 10, 20, 30, 50 gallons at a time are crossing the docks. You know, an occasional 2 or 3 gallons here and there I don't think is such a big issue. Can it be worded in such a way that we can put in some other BMPs to accommodate, to still try and allow? I'd probably. Something to look around other places for.
Okay. Gene, anything else? Okay. Good point. Joe?
Once again, he pretty much covered what I had in mind there. That was my only real issue, was the fueling thing, because, like we said, at times, the fuel dock should be lower, but at times, you know, you can get fuel at the gas station for $1 a gallon less. And that's a lot of money, especially when you're trying to make a living on the water. You know what I mean? So that was pretty much my only issue.
So, Joe, you know, as a commercial fisherman, you would, if you, you know, filled up at the gas station, does that mean you have to take your boat out of the bay and then go to the gas station? Or do you have the 32-gallon tanks that you, I mean, again, I'm just being very, I'm not saying you specifically, but maybe another fisherman.
I'm sure the guys do have those. I have, myself, I have 4 or 5-gallon jugs that I can carry fuel in, and I generally keep them on, you know, I'll generally keep at least one on the boat just in case of an emergency. I'm also lucky in the fact that I have a small boat and I can pull it out on a trailer and go to the gas station if I wanted to. Right now, the fuel prices aren't bad at the fuel dock, so I've been going to the fuel dock. But at times, like I said, $1 a gallon, that ends up to be a lot of money, especially for a small boat commercial fisherman, especially for a guy that's doing open access, when you might make a couple $100 that day, you might not. You know, an extra $20, $30, $40 in fuel is a lot of money.
Okay, point taken. Lynn?
Dealing with the pleasure craft, it has been I try and keep my fuel tank full, which means after I burn it 5 hours or so, I bring a jerry can of 5 gallons down and refill it in order to keep it full. I don't want to have to go to the fuel dock for 5 gallons of fuel. So if you simply make sure that there's, or do everything possible with the new jerry cans, they have all kinds of little things on them so that they don't, supposedly don't spill. There's one that does. I've found one that I like.
Bring your name here.
That I can manage quite well and not spill, and it's pretty certain. And then the diaper will take care of any drips that I happen to have. So, but anyway, that would be my objection to that particular item.
One of the things that, it strikes me as we're putting these rules and regulations together, you can't repair your boat, you got to take it to the boatyard. We have no boatyard. You basically can't have 3-gallon, 4-gallon, fuel. We have one fuel station that's more money. So, one of the things that we, as we do codify some of these things and do make rules and regulations, one of the things, and then we raised some fees too, we got to try to strengthen the infrastructure too and make sure that there is opportunities to have, I know it's difficult, but it's just a thing that strikes me as being a little bit unequal in some respect. Just a comment on my part. Neil?
So in regards strictly to the prohibition of fueling and slips, I know there's basically two prongs. There's skiffs, which pose a possible risk, and then the tank transfers. I'll speak first, I guess, to the skiffs. For my skiff that I fuel up, we have a 6-gallon tank that's on my boat, but it's within a spill container, basically a large Tupperware-made container that I have a small hole where the fuel line actually comes out of and goes to the props. And inside that spill container, I have the spill, the diapers, what are we calling those? The oil absorbent pads. So when we fill, we use a funnel inside of the spill container. So if there is any spill, it's contained within that container. And I have to be pretty careful because I also use that same skiff to handle a food product. That's worked well for us. I'm not going to say that there's never a possibility for a mistake, but I would say that when I had another skiff without a spill container, sometimes that boat might take on some water and you see your jerry can kind of floating around the boat, and I've had fuel mixing with my water, and you have to imagine it goes both ways sometimes. So some kind of, not necessarily education, but maybe more, for me it's a regulation because I'm regulated by the California Department of Public Health, totally separate, but, and I'm not sure if it should be a regulation or not, but to have a spill container that all those skiffs have, all the skiffs have their fuel cans in, and it has a lid to it to prevent rainwater from filling up that spill container as well. That's an option for skiffs, just for discussion's sake. As far as tank transfers and for larger actual fishing vessels that aren't skiffs, what about the possibility of having your methods approved by the Harbor Department? And I understand there might be some costs involved, and you mentioned strengthening the infrastructure, but if I'm a guy who's got a 50-gallon drum on my boat and I want to transfer it, maybe instead of going in the middle of the night, I could talk to the Harbor Department and say, hey, this is how I'm going to do it. Can you walk me through this and maybe have the Coast Guard involved and just say, this is my method. Maybe there's a responsible way to do that and bring it into the light and regulate it from that side instead of prohibit, just regulate it. So those are my two ideas on that. That's what I got.
Good point, Neil. Eric, do you have something to say?
Yeah, I just want to add, and where this crosses the line, I don't know. Fueling of vessels is regulated by NFPA, the National Fire Protection, all the stuff that the fire department regulates. Fueling is covered under the national NFPA code, and we adopt that. And the fire department does all their fire regulations via that. And there is specific fueling requirements for vessel fueling. Where a 5-gallon jerry can to top off a tank crosses over into the NFPA world, I don't know. It's something to look into. And that's why I thought of them. Neil, you brought that up, because at some point a tank system, whether it's out of the back of a pickup truck into a 55-gallon drum down the dock, or it's a 5-gallon plastic jug that you're carrying down, one on each arm, at some point I suspect it crosses over into being NFPA, having to be NFPA compliant, and at that point it gets pretty onerous, where it really pushes it back to a fuel dock, and I don't know where that point is, but it's something to look into. But it's
Joe?
All right. I actually did a lot of research on that before, Eric. And pretty much what it states is that you cannot pump fuel off of a dock or off of a pier. However, you can transport it across. So by the regulation, you can if I could lift a 55-gallon drum off the dock onto my boat and then put it sitting on the boat, I don't know, I'm getting pretty weak. If I could put a 55-gallon drum of fuel on my boat and then fuel off the thing sitting on my deck, I can put the fuel in the boat legally. If it's sitting on the dock, I cannot pump it into the boat. Then so that's pretty much
it. Then it's a pumping, then it's a fueling station situation that falls under all those guidelines, but if you've got on deck, you're just fueling with a jerry can on deck.
Roger. You can transport across the dock, you can't pump off of it.
I'll look into that. And that would make a pretty clear sort of situation. And that may be the way that it gets addressed, that, hey, you're not falling under NFPA. If you fall under NFPA, you got to follow NFPA. And NFPA says, and if this is indeed the case, I'm not doubting you, Joe, I don't have the regulation in front of me. If you got the guns to put, a 55-gallon drum on your deck, you can pump out a 55-gallon drum. If not, you're doing it 5 gallons at a time, but you can't be pumping off of something into your boat. Okay, we'll look into that. That's a good point.
Okay. Dana?
I want to back up to the fourth one down. Oil absorbent pads or other containment devices be used around fuel nozzles when fueling to prevent accidental spillage. I think that kind of takes care of the following one that we've been talking about, prohibition of fueling and slips. So you're kind of taking care of it there. The problem I have with the fueling and slips is infrastructure. We don't have a fuel dock that's suitable for boats to come up to, all boats. I mean, fishing boats, bigger boats, yeah, you can go up to the pilings and stuff, and some of these bigger boats can do that pretty easily. But, I talk to a lot of transients that come to our dock, the yacht club. And they'll say, yeah, we were buddy boating down from Washington or Oregon or something. And friends of ours, they don't come here because there's no dock to tie up. They just bypass this and go to Santa Barbara because you can tie up to a dock. They don't want to beat up their boat. They don't want to get tar all over it or whatever. And I know a lot of people that use jerry cans. I do. So I think having this one with this other best management practice up above, number four, I guess you could call it, kind of would take care of that stuff. I just see a lot of problems that have been coming up with people's comments as far as fueling at the slips, it appears. Other than that, everything else looks good. The pet waste one, I remember some years back there was a problem with the otters. There was a disease, and it was from cat feces. And so that's very understandable. If people kind of go, well, what's pet waste? What's that matter? But it does matter a lot. And then also the fish waste, that you're attracting sea lions and other things too sometimes when you do that. We know.
I love
it. Yeah, there you go. So those are my comments.
Okay, thank you, Dana. Ron?
Going back to one of Gene's concerns, we were talking about vessel repair on the water and so on. There's an opportunity to address that with an existing city ordinance, maybe with a little bit of wordsmithing. Chapter 15.24.010, which is refuse discharge prohibited under the harbor sanitation section. Item B states no person shall throw, discharge, deposit, or leave, or cause, suffer, or permit to be thrown, discharged, deposited, or left, either from the shore or from any pier or vessel, any refuse matter of any description into the navigable waters of Morro Bay or on the shore of Morro Bay and so on. So if the concept was refuse, I think is problematic in terms of this particular language as it relates to topic number 10 that we were talking about. This body can recommend, I suppose, to the Harbor Department and the City Council to whom it serves, that word be modified, expanded, or something without going nuts. Also, there's an opportunity, I think, in that same Section B to include or fuel. So any refuse matter of any description, comma, or fuel, comma, into the navigable waters of Morro Bay. And that would seem to address folks that are concerned about overregulation and folks that think that, you know, some regulation is probably necessary.
So, Ron, backtrack 15-24-010, is that what you're referring to?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Thank you.
Section B.
Yeah. Gotcha.
If I can point you to, you're looking at the rules and regs?
Yeah.
Section, if you go down to 15-24-020, flammable material discharge prohibited. No person shall pump or discharge from any vessel or tank into the waters of Morro Bay oil, spirits of any flammable liquid, or deposit any rubbish, refuse, matter, or articles of any offensive character.
I guess flammable liquid would cover fuel, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, that could be, that looks like pretty old language, but.
Well, flammable liquid is fuel by definition.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I also agree with several of my fellow board members that a BMP that relates to fueling on vessels has got to allow small containers, a limited number or whatever of small containers to be used. There's literally dozens of boats in the harbor who rely upon portable fuel containers to fuel their vessels. So
hundreds.
Dana says hundreds, and I wouldn't argue with that. So what we're down to, it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, we're down to the core issue, which is, does this body want to move to advise the City of Morro Bay that its municipal code and or Harbor Department rules and regulations be amended to require employment of and compliance with certain accepted BMPs for vessel ownership, operation, and repair / maintenance?
With that, this body, Dana, what are your thoughts on that?
I like all of these recommendations of BMPs.
Yes, I'm in agreement with that, except for the prohibition of fueling at slips. Otherwise, I like all the staff's recommendations for BMPs.
Okay. Ron, so with that comment you made, what's your thoughts on it? Are you okay with some of these recommendations, or do you feel that they're not needed?
I absolutely think that advisory BMPs are in the best interest of the harbor and the community and the people that use the harbor. I heard very clearly what Lynn said, and I heard very clearly what Gene said, which is the question is whether they should be codified as code or not, as opposed to an advisory body, and I think that's the question that needs to be addressed. So I would suggest that a motion be made one way or the other, and that opens it up to brief discussion and then a vote.
Well, that's a good point. As my comment earlier stated, some of these rules and regulations might be okay if we had the infrastructure to actually handle it. I mean, if we had multiple fuel stations, if the prices of fuel was low, you know, blah, blah, blah. Excuse me. But you're absolutely right. I mean, as advisory items as opposed to a code, that's an interesting comment. I don't know. Dana, your thoughts?
Well, I think what Ron's getting at is, yeah, I don't know that we need to make a motion to really discuss this, but part of it is, as recommendations and advising people is one thing, but it's not enforceable. So whether we pick through here, and I think it's pretty obvious that the one feeling it slips is one that most of us have commented, if not all of us, that we could do without because of the other recommendations here for best management practices that might cover that. I think they should be part of the code or the rules so that the Harbor Department does have, like you said earlier, that in their toolbox to go ahead and use. Otherwise, they're just going and telling people, and they'll go, well, where does it say I can't do this? You know, and I mean, you could go back and go through here and find chapter and verse, which is very general, or you could just say, it's right here. Here's the list. And I think any responsible boater, it's not going to be a problem because they're going to follow these anyway.
Point taken. Neil?
I agree with Dane on that. I think that, and I would like to hear the people who oppose and want that to be not in the code and would like to have that as advisory, what they think the impact of just having that as advisory would actually be, because I feel that having it as a regulation would give a little more teeth to this document.
And your thoughts on the prohibition of fueling in slips, you feel that that should maybe be taken out?
As I think I was, the point I was really trying to make is that it might not necessarily prohibition of it, but maybe management of it. I'm not saying it needs to go unregulated because it is a horrible pollutant if it is spilled and if people are reckless about it. There needs to be something, whether it's a requirement or not. That's the one that I'm a little more iffy on, but I think that I don't think that it, if it defaults to the other regulation, the federal regulation that, as you were pointing out, of pumping across the dock, I think that kind of already covers that issue with the tanks going across the dock. But as far as jerry cans go, it would make my business pretty impossible. And I know a lot of people who get to and from their skiffs or to their homes on the water would have a real tough time if they couldn't fill up their boats with jerry cans. That being said, I think there's a responsible way to do that, possibly the spill containers that have the oil absorbent pads in them. That's one way to kind of level the playing field with the other boats that have to put, if you're going to have them put oil absorbent pads in their bilge. I don't necessarily have a bilge, I just have my boat. So the spill container kind of contains that. And that's my thought, I guess, on that, if that answers the answer.
Would it be helpful to break these down and we'll just go through each one and get a consensus or sense of it? The fueling one, I think we've pretty well beaten up and put to bed. I'm fine with going and looking at the NFPA, and it sounds like the pumping versus jerry canning is a way, and maybe add some BMPs to the jerry canning part of it.
Eric, let's one thing is, as Ron said it, and I think it is an interesting point, and there are some viewpoints on this side of the table, kind of, that maybe we shouldn't codify these things and it should be only advisory. And I'd like to hear from Lynn on her thoughts on that, and also Joe and Gene first, before maybe we go one-on-one. Lynn?
I obviously prefer the advisory approach. It takes longer and it requires more effort than simply passing a law and saying you absolutely cannot do this or else you're going to pay a $100 fine or something of that nature. But I like it better for society to get cooperation rather than compulsory things.
Thanks, Lynn. Joe?
From what I kind of, the way that I understand it is that a lot of these things are just making an already existing rule or law more specific. Which I don't really know if it's necessary. I mean, if it's already illegal or if it's already a law that you can do it, I'll use the, since I can't find it in this packet right now because I have it all mismatched, I'll use the last one that I saw, which was the dumping of fish waste. It's already illegal to dump anything in the water. So to make a specific one to fish waste just kind of seems like a waste of time. If it's already illegal and somebody's doing it, give them a ticket. It'll get around pretty quick that you can't dump stuff in the water. That's just kind of my viewpoint on it.
Gene?
I already practice a lot of the best management practices, regulations, or not regulations, but guidelines. I think most prudent, responsible owners do. I like Lynn's idea of education as opposed to authoritarian, hammering down, gun-toting, Gestapo-type regulations. I like Neil's idea of additional containment. I haven't done that, but I think it's a great idea. And Ron mentioned that maybe some of the changing of the wording of the existing regulations and codes will suffice. I hate to see additional regulations imposed on regulations that are already in place. So.
Okay. Well, Ron?
Eric, do you think it's practically possible to meet the needs of the Harbor Department as a potential, but not necessarily, enforcement body by addressing Section B of 15.24.010 as it relates to our agenda item number 13?
Can you ask that again in a different way?
Sure.
I didn't quite get what you're asking.
Do you think it's practically, and I'm not talking about whether the City Council would agree or not agree, Do you think it's practically possible to recraft Section B of 15.24.010 to incorporate the Harbor Department's concerns about the various issues in our agenda item number 13 tonight? Because it seems to me that if you take your bullet items and your recommendation, those can be compressed into two or three concepts.
Yeah, I think, Ron, yes. I think the simple answer is yes. That section, the flammable material section, and the 24030 dead animal section, I think it can all, as Joe said, it's kind of already in there in some places, but specifically calling out these widely accepted BMPs has a value in and of itself, and making it more clear. If someone were to just read this right now, well, maybe I can throw fish waste, maybe I can't. If it says, thou shalt not throw fish waste, it makes it more clear. Thou shalt not, discharge whatever from boat maintenance. Makes it more clear. I think part of this exercise is to clean up our rules and regulations and modernize it, because some of the language is pretty old and making it match today's BMP. So I don't want to add regulation on top of regulation that's already there, add something unnecessary by any means, but I think making this more clear and taking the now industry accepted BMPs as, if you go to Eureka or you go to different ports up and down the state and across the nation, you see the same language, you see the same thing, and that leads to the education part, when people see the same thing over and over, I go to Lake Tahoe and I rent a boat and I see the thing there, and I go to Lake Michigan and I see it there, and I go to San Diego and I see it there. The message going over and over and over, I think that's another value in making sure that our language is good, not just, it catches it in there. We want to make sure we say it right.
Well, I appreciate the advisory point, and I think it's necessary. But when the harbor director sits in front of the harbor advisory board and says, the harbor department needs a little more muscle on some of these issues, we need to be able to enforce if it comes to that. That gets my attention, and I think that the board has an obligation to recognize that the harbor director is expressing a need, which perhaps can be addressed through modifications of existing code.
So, Ron, like 15-24-010, we could handle a lot of the fuel issues. And the discharge, the sand abitably, the dead animals, we can even handle the pet waste in that section, too. I mean, you're probably right. I mean, if we tighten up the language in our existing code by maybe putting some of these bullet items within it somehow or on the language basis, it does the purpose that you're trying to accomplish. Would you agree, Eric? You said the simple answer would be yes.
Yeah, the simple answer is I would agree. The fuel one, it's sort of a little separate, and I think I've got some good clarity on that. If the direction or the consensus of the board is, we like all these things, but can we mold them into the existing and make it work, I can certainly do that. I think that approach works for me. It looks like it does, given what existing language we have and what I need to go with.
Gene?
Eric, under our city's clean marine certification, is there a level, a tier level? Or we've got a certification now. Do they review it in a year from now? Or
It's good for 5 years. It's actually up next year. So the timing on this is good, because some of these things we need to have in our rules and regulations are written down that we do certain things. And so far we've been okay with what we have, but we need to codify it. So putting this together and having that ready for next year will be good. We are putting it into leases for Clean Marina certification. Yacht Club's got it. The old fuel dock, the old Coakley lease down where the Fosters are now have it, and in Stand Trap for Marina Square.
So that's really what's driving this particular issue
here. It's driving some of it, and regional water board requirements, and other Coastal Commission permit stuff, things that show up in all sorts of different permits. Really, in the long run, it helps us all help ourselves, in that when somebody goes for a permit or somebody's under some kind of regulatory review, that you've complied with this, you've got these accepted BMPs, and your language is there. It works for everybody.
Who creates the Clean Marine Certificate?
The Clean Marina California program is a 501c something nonprofit that works up and down the coast, all over the state, with this industry and regulatorily accepted program of inspection and certification. And your certificate's good for every 5 years. It's right. They've got one paid staffer right now. It's largely a volunteer effort that without going into great detail, the Clean Marina program was established down in San Diego to keep Yacht Harbor from being severely regulated by the regional water board down there. They agreed to put this program in place to keep a major draconian permitting process from coming down.
Okay, so my next question is, when they review our work, can we just state that we're going to refer to our code to meet these regulations? Or do they want to see something written out, thou shall not throw fish waste over the side?
That's a tough question. There's a lot of it is the meeting a requirement. You refer to a code or a regulation or a rule that you have. A lot of it is like you say, something hard and fast you have written down. So it's a combination. It's a
Okay, my next question.
Tough question to answer. It's on a scored basis that you have to reach a minimum percent to pass.
In the city of San Diego, in a recent development, they did not have advisory BMPs. The yard did not have advisory BMPs, and they got spanked big time.
Okay, so my next question is, and this goes to Lynn's part on the education. Do we have a pamphlet that we can hand out? Somebody comes in the office and say, these are our best management practices that we like to see informed?
Absolutely. We've got a ton of those. And, in fact, the Clean Marina Certification, in almost every one of the 11 or 12 sections, the first two or three items is, and they refer to marina because you're a marina, even though we're not a
right.
City of Morro Bay is not a marina, we're a harbor. Marina supplies boater education for X, Y, and Z, and a lot of that is these pamphlets that Fish and Game and Coastal Commission and all these different organizations put out with all these BMPs. So a lot of it is that educational stuff, and you get the points for that. And just by providing that, you meet that BMP and you meet those regulations.
So do you feel that we need to do more than just say refer to section of our municipal code to meet these regulations, or would you rather see these things spelled out?
And when you're thinking about that, think about grant requests.
I don't know if there's an answer to that, Gene. There's no one-size-fit-all answer to that question. Some things will work one way, some things will work another, and I can't say there's a blanket.
The only reason I say that is in working with codes, which I do all the time, mm-hmm. there's refers to this section here, then an exception, and that's the legal way things are done. But apparently things are a little more broad in the clean management system here?
If the clean marina requirement, and I'm sort of making this up, but it's sort of real life, if the clean marina requirement says thou shalt not allow fueling of vessels in their slips or fueling over the dock, our answer to that may not necessarily have to be, well, here it is in the Morro Bay's Muni Code, but we enforce... We go by NFPA. NFPA says you can't do this. You know, you can jerry jug it, but you can't pump it. So, yeah, it can be a reference to another law, or regulation, or code that isn't necessarily Morro Bay's, if that answers your question.
Sort of.
I'm not good at simple yes or no. Sorry.
So, you know, there's a couple things that we're discussing here is taking the actually bullet points and trying to squeeze them in our existing code, to leave the bullet points as is, maybe eliminate the fueling in the slip section out of that, or not do anything. I mean, that's kind of where we are right now. I'm assuming. Ron?
Oh, I'm prepared to make a motion that we move on.
Okay. Dana?
Yeah, just one more comment. We're kind of discussing this, the bullet points versus no bullet points and just referring to the brief description, and that we don't need these because we have that brief description. But this is more specific and therefore is enlightening to people if they do read it. There is no question. Maybe you don't have a question with it. You don't have a question with it because you're experienced boaters and people that work on the water or whatever. But a new boater sees it. Oh, specific. Well, I go that they're talking about fish carcasses too, and they're talking about pet waste too. I didn't really think of that. I would have never have known. So I think it's important for these to be included in a way as, okay, here is the code and it talks about not polluting, not throwing refuse or whatever, such as, and then some of these bullet points. I think that's a clear way of getting the message across. We're not adding any regulation. We're just defining it so that the common boater or the new boater or whoever, everybody can read it and understand it. And at the same time, we're looking at a broader spectrum. You brought up grants and dealing with the Clean Marina program, and I think that puts us up to up to speed with what's going on, and instead of just kind of, oh, well, we know what to do. We know how to take care of Morro Bay, and we do. We do a good job of it. But now it's written down, and so I think it's important. I think it's worth doing. That's
okay. Ron, you have a motion?
Move that the Harbor Advisory Board recommend to the city and to the Harbor Department that the Harbor Department provide the City Council with modified drafts of Chapter 15.24 as it deems necessary, and that the city develop Morro Bay, a set of Morro Bay-specific harbor-related best management practices as an advisory document. And for what it's worth, I'd be happy to help with that.
Okay, I have a motion on the table. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion on the table and a second. Okay, let's take this back to discussion. Ron, do you have anything else to comment or discuss on this? Dana?
Yes, I do. And that is that this be brought back once this is put into language for us to kind of to okay, I guess. I see a lot of leeway here, but it all looks like it's going in the right direction. So I'm for this. But I just would like to see it before it goes to the council.
So on a clarification basis, though, Dana, I mean, just so that you understand, is that Ron's motion, I'm a feeling, is completely against what your comment just was.
I understand that.
Oh, okay.
But I understand that, but it's also there's a big hole there. He says, as appropriate, asking staff to write this up as appropriate. And that these be advisory, but you know that could also relate to these, as these are explanations of what you are not supposed to do. Even though it says advisory, you're not supposed to do them.
Okay.
So that could be in that language.
Neil?
I agree with Dana. I for clarification as well, I think that I would like to see what the harbor puts into the changes as he also asked for of Section 15.24. So whatever changes happen there, and then whatever the advisory is, I'd like to see that. After I see what changes you guys make, it might make sense for me too, because I'm more for actual code changes. But could be a good balance.
My intent on the whole package of all of these three sections was to eventually bring it back.
Right.
Right.
Whether I'll do that all at once or we'll try and do it by sections, I don't know. It just kind of depends on how big and onerous it all is.
Okay. Well, I'm actually okay with the recommendations also, and as long as some of these bullet points are self-inclusive in the 15-24-010. Lynn?
Yes. You're talking on one hand about putting some of these things into regulation, Dana. But regulations are not written for people to read, really. People don't go and read the regulation before they start to do something. They will look at a pamphlet and see a nice, simple sentence that says, we would like you not to throw pet waste over, or whatever else is there in language that is common language, understandable and...
They're signed all over the place.
Right, but you're going to get, people don't always read them. But you think if they don't read those or understand those, they're going to go to a Muni code and read it and follow it? That's one reason that I like Ron's motion, because it is the advisory part and not including it, every detail in the Muni code. As I understood his motion to be.
Can I answer that? There was a question to me.
Yeah, Dana.
I was referring to your comment specifically.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dana.
Yeah, it's just that they are written. You see them on signs. Municipal code, right here. Don't do this. And sometimes those are needed. And you can read this. And it can still be in a pamphlet. And sometimes rules are in the pamphlets, quite often. So I would say it's not unheard of at all. I look forward to seeing as it comes back.
Okay. Lynn, anything else?
No.
Okay, Joe?
No, I got nothing.
Okay. Gene?
I've been working on the bay for almost 50 years, and back then I considered the bay a pristine bay. I still consider it a fairly pristine bay, and I will do whatever I can to support it. I like Lynn's idea of education. A number of years ago, when there first started being kayaks on the bay, I considered them the dirt bikes of the estuary because they were, you know, they would come up to a sleeping otter and poke it. Since then, the concessionaires with the kayaks have told them that when they rent a kayak, you've got to be respectful of the environment. You've got to, you know, not throw trash out. You can't go poking the sea otters. The education part works. Yeah, well, the education works. You know, I'm seeing that more and more with the stand-up paddlers who used to go down the bay never looking behind when some boat's going down with the stream trying to get around them. The education part works, and I like some kind of pamphlet that will derive out of this, with some pamphlet that will tell somebody coming in the bay, oh, yeah, we can't throw our pooch's pet waste over the edge there.
Okay. So maybe we can get the best of both worlds. Eric?
Yeah, I want to add a couple things. Advising and education is always the first tool we use. We never go straight for the gun and start shooting. That's just a joke, but we never go straight for enforcement. It's always education, 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 if not to a fault. That's always the first tool, whether it's pamphlets, whether it's handouts, whether it's spots on the radio or things here. That's always the most effective tool and the most bang for the buck. But you've got to have codified things to back that up when education doesn't work, because education doesn't always work. One of my other long-term projects that Paulie and I were just talking about before we came down here is our paperwork process for folks coming in and renting a pier for a day or permanent slip holders is pretty old and outdated. We really need to redo all of our contracts and license agreements for folks that have slips and folks that come in. And part of that package is going to be more than just one little card that you fill out six lines on and sign the back, which is currently about what we have. It's going to be more of a handout package that has what somebody asked about. I think, Ron, you mentioned a Morro Bay BMPs, or maybe it's Dana. We intend to create just that, where we have, you know, here's the. It's not going to be a one card thing anymore. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be about three or four page contract that you're going to sign, and here's our BMPs, and here's some handouts. This is going to have all this stuff in there, so the education part is always up front, and so that every boater, at least that comes to us, and we'd be happy to supply that to the yacht club as well, because we know if folks aren't coming to our slip or our pier, they're most likely going to the yacht club. So that should catch most, if not all, the visitors, and then the folks using our slips, and then we'll disseminate that to our lease sites as well, so they can get that to all their boaters. So that everybody's got the same materials and it's not a mishmash of things. So I think we will be doing that, and that is the absolute intent.
Okay, thank you, Eric. So I have a motion on the table, and I have a second. We've had discussion. Is there any other discussion? Anyone want to say anything else? So I'd like to call this for a vote. All in favor of Ron's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Hearing none. You have your directions, Eric. So we're going to tighten up the 15-24-010 and 15-24.
Several section of 15-24.
Right. And these best management practices will be an advisory thing that you can maybe do a pamphlet on. I think that's a great idea if we don't already have one. Okay, moving on, we have number 14, marine sanitation devices and discharge into the bay.
Okay, we saved the best for last. This one could get lengthy, so we'll just see how it goes. So the issue on this is two issues, actually. We've had quite a bit of discussion on this. I think we had MSDs front-loaded, and we've had it involved in a couple of liveaboard discussions that we've had over the last 6 to 8 months, maybe a year, and that being MSD, marine sanitation device, meaning basically your toilet and your facility to contain your human waste in your vessel. The two issues generally raised are, should all vessels using Morro Bay waters be required as a general matter to have some type of Coast Guard approved and operational MSD aboard at all times? And number two, are type 1 and type 2 MSDs, which are basically a treatment type MSD that treats your waste and discharges it. They just treat them to different levels, whether it's a type 1 or 2. Are those allowed and legally able to discharge in Morro Bay waters? Currently, as in 1524, you're not allowed to discharge anything in Morro Bay waters, whether that's your own human waste or, as we spoke, fish waste and other things, but it's not necessarily so specific. Regarding the first issue, can the City of Morro Bay require all vessels to have some sort of Coast Guard approved MSD? I've brought this up before and I'll bring it up again. Section 775 of the California State Harbors and Navigation Code stipulates that, and I'll read it outright, stipulates that in the interest of uniform standards and procedures, vessel owners should not be subject to any local or state regulation as to the type of marine sanitation devices installed on vessels and the marine sanitation devices used be in conformance with the Federal Water Pollution Control Act. And further, Harbors and Navigation Code Section 782 states that no vessel is subject to any other state or local government law, ordinance, or regulation with respect to the design, manufacture, installation, or use within any vessel of any marine sanitation device. My interpretation of that, meaning the City of Morro Bay can't require anything beyond what federal law already requires, which state law adopts. So we can't go in and say, Fred, you have to have this type or that type of MSD on your boat. If you have one installed, it has to be Coast Guard compliant. And if federal law says you have to have one installed, then you have to have the type that the federal law stipulates, and that's generally in the larger commercial vessels. So federal law stipulates that if you have a toilet aboard, it must be Coast Guard approved type and be capable of preventing direct discharge of untreated waste overboard. It does not stipulate which type of MSD has to be on board, simply that if one is aboard, it must be compliant. That's regarding sort of the first issue. Regarding the second issue, unless in a federal no-discharge zone, and Morro Bay is not one, it's not a designated federal no-discharge zone, federal law does allow discharge of type 1 and type 2 MSD sewage into state waters. Harbors and Navigation Code Section 782 states, notwithstanding another provision of the law, nothing in this chapter precludes or restricts any city, county, or other public agency from adopting rules or regulations with respect to the discharge of sewage from vessels. So state law does allow us to say you cannot discharge sewage, treated or otherwise, into our waters. Morro Bay Municipal Code strictly prohibits discharge of any human or animal excrement into Morro Bay waters. The section is mute as to whether treated human excrement is allowed, but absent a qualifier, we would take it that this is a prohibition of any discharge, treated or untreated. And again, regarding regulation of MSD installation, it's a staff interpretation that we have no authority to regulate or require installation of MSDs on vessels, but that we do have the ability to regulate whether discharge of treated waste is allowed, and currently our code, although it doesn't specifically address discharge of waste from a type 1 or type 2, is not allowed. There are those in the community that feel that unless we are in a no-discharge zone, they are allowed to discharge treated waste from a type 1 or type 2. So I feel like I'm talking around in circles at this point. we're not recommending that the City of Morro Bay attempt to regulate MSD type of installation on vessels or whether one has one on a boat or not. But we would recommend that the Municipal Code Section 1524.010, our favorite section, be amended to clarify the discharge of both treated and untreated sewage. And again, this goes back to BMPs and being more clear and concise. There, like I said, there's an interpretation out there in the community that treated sewage discharge is okay. If it were okay, the Regional Water Board would probably have a say in that in terms of how it's tested. And how you determine that it is discharging under the limit that the manufacturer says it is. Just because you have one on board doesn't necessarily mean that it's working properly. So I think the simple fallback is that we really should regulate. We do regulate that no discharge whatsoever. Our Muni Code says that, but it isn't specific to Type 1 or Type 2, and we think it should, Muni Code should be changed to specifically address the Type 1s and Type 2s that they are not allowed to be discharged. Just to clarify.
Very confusing. So a couple questions and comments from your discussion. So you've stated that your recommendation and your thought process here is not so much to state that registered boat owners in our bay, besides the liveaboards, as I see fit here, have a discharge device on board. It just says that they can't discharge into the bay. Is that correct?
So correct, and that's a good caveat on the liveaboards, because liveaboards are a permitted use by a permit that has conditions. The MSD becomes a condition if you want that permit, so it's a different issue, but yes.
Okay. And then, and I know I'm not prepared tonight to discuss this, but why... You know, and I think we've talked about this, and there's been some people that have brought this up, is that is the City of Morro Bay, or are you in a position to state, should we, as a city, demand that all registered boat owners in our bay have an MSD?
No, we can't.
We can't.
Under state law, we have to follow federal law, and state law says no local can stipulate the size, type, color, number, installation of an MSD on
I understand that, but can we specify that they have to have something? No. Okay.
No.
United States Code, Section 312, states, Part 1A, except as provided in subparagraph B after the effect, which is defense military, after the effective date of the initial standards and regulations promulgated under this section, no state or political subdivision thereof shall adopt or enforce any statute or regulation of such state or political subdivision with respect to the design, manufacture, or installation or use of any marine sanitation device on any vessel subject to the provisions of this section.
So could you explain in that plain English? Seriously.
And Morro Bay can't do it.
Okay, thank you.
And state law basically adopted that.
All right, then it's a moot point. Okay, so Eric, let me ask some questions here in our group, and I'm going to start down with you, Gene.
No, I'd like to hear what the rest of the board has to say first.
Okay, Joe?
So what I get from it is that it's basically, should we allow people to dump sewage if it's treated? Is that correct?
Let me quote 1524.010A in our Muni Code. No person shall discharge or permit or allow any other person on a vessel under his control or command to discharge any human or animal excreta into the waters of Morro Bay. Currently, we have a prohibition of any human or animal excreta being discharged into Morro Bay. I would purport that that means treated or untreated. Our code is mute to that. What I am recommending is, because there is a belief out there, and some people are frankly confused because the manufacturer of some of those devices out there say, these are legal for discharge in state waters unless it's a no-discharge zone. And because we're not a no-discharge zone, some people believe those are allowable. They are not, according to our Muni Code that's already in place. I what I'm recommending is that our muni code be changed, and it's kind of like our discussion we had previously, to make it more clear, to make it more understandable, that specifically brings up or cites that type 1 and type MS2 discharge included, not allowed to be, even though it's treated. Some people think, well, it's treated, it's okay. Well, no, not according to moral base code. State code, yeah, but we can be more restrictive in that regard. That one section in the state law that I read after that first section specifically does allow local jurisdictions to regulate the discharge of devices. Not that you have one on or not, but if you do have one on and it is dischargeable, we can regulate whether or not you discharge that.
Okay. I understand. Joe, do you understand?
I understand that. Okay. So I've never had a boat with a head on it. I haven't been that lucky. Is there a place for people to come pump off their boat with waste and or sewage? There is?
Well, yeah, then, several.
Well, yeah, then I'm all for it.
Lynn?
I am in favor of rewording that ordinance to include what you want it to include for clarity. And I would suspect that in 4 to 5 years you'll be coming back and rewriting it again as they are developing newer and better mechanisms and ways of treating discharge so that it will be reliable. And knowing that's going to be true, that's fine. We'll rewrite it again in 5 years.
I see nothing wrong with this, and I'm completely in favor of it. Neil?
So two prongs on this again. As an oyster farmer, there's industry in the bay that's we exist here because of the cleanliness of the bay and would like to see that maintained. I would say, you know, my understanding between type 1 and 2, that one is chemical and one is biological, and they might have different effects on the treated sewage. Not saying that if, let's say, they are safe, they would need to get a lot of testing would need to be maintained. It's not just a one-off test, which those tests cost money. I think they're around $55 per test is what I pay for my water testing. Which tests fecal bacteria, fecal coliform. And there's volunteer programs that go around the bay that NEP is involved with, and they test water samples from around the bay. And now that there's Los Osos is getting plugged into the sewage treatment, there's areas that previously did not meet the standards for swimming, meaning that the health department would issue warnings that for public safety, just it's not safe to swim. I think that as Morro Bay is cleaning up 360 degrees from Los Osos as well, I think to make sure that these rules are not only maintained but also very clear for people to understand, I think that's important as the dirt bikes of the bay would no longer be allowed to go swimming in the estuary. So there's multiple industry, I think, as well as Morro Bay in a whole that could be affected by if that were to be allowed, I think is kind of a slippery slope because that's a lot of management needs to go into that if it was allowed to be discharged. That's all I got right now.
Dana?
Yeah, I would agree with man that's in the industry that, and we are talking about the environment with these items, and I would agree with his comments and go that route.
Ryan?
The clarification that the Harbor Department would like to see incorporated into 15.24.010 paragraph A, I'm fine with. And just as a point of reference for the public, a type 1 marine sanitation device, by virtue of federal law, which is 33 CFR section 159, is not necessarily either biological or chemical. It could be either. But the law states that it's effluent, has a, quote, fecal coliform bacterial count not greater than 1,000 parts per 100 milliliters, and no visible floating solids. That's a type 1. Type 2, federal regulations say that the effluent has a fecal coliform bacteria count not greater than 200 parts per 100 milliliters, and suspended solids not greater than 150 milligrams per liter. In other words, you can discharge suspended solids within the letter of the law from a type 2 device.
Okay, Gene.
Does incinerators count? I mean, did that regulate, you know, electrical incinerators that cook?
Okay.
I'm serious.
No, he's no. And point of fact, the Raritan type 1 fries the stuff. It's part of what it does electrically.
And that would be prohibited also, correct?
Correct, because eventually those discharge that fried material.
Okay.
And by the way, and it's not. It's my understanding from Raritan and other manufacturers that there isn't sufficient heat to kill all of the bacteria. It reduces the solids.
But does it then fall under the limits that you just read us a few minutes ago of 100
it does
and
if it,
some
solids? It does if it's sold in the United States.
Thank you.
Okay, with all that, is there anyone here that would like to make a motion for number 14? Mr. Ron?
Oh, I think Gene's reaching for his button.
Okay, Gene?
I'll make a motion that we approve the staff report as written.
Do I hear a second?
Staff recommendation.
Staff
you mean?
Recommendation, sorry.
Yes. Second.
Okay, I hear a motion and I hear a second. Bring it back here for any more discussion. So do I hear any more discussion on this? Dana?
No comment.
Okay. Okay, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Hearing none. You got that? Thank
you. Who was the second?
Ron. Okay, so I think that ends the main body of our meeting here. And I would like to then, do you have anything else to comment, Eric, or do you have any clarifications you'd like to ask us before we move on?
No, thank you. As I said, we're going to end up spend a little time packaging all this back together, then we'll swing back through and eventually get City Council with it. Thank you for all the work on it.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Appreciate it. So, moving along here, I'd like to update from our ad hoc committees. And the first one here would be update from the Marine Services Facility, Boatyard, and Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities, findings, and recommendations. And would that be you, Ron?
Yes. The committee, per se, has nothing to report. However, I would defer to the harbor director because the city council recently gave a directive to the harbor director to take some action as it relates to the boatyard.
Eric?
Mr. Endersby?
Thank you. Yeah, City Council did give me some direction and some money. As requested in the staff report, I can't remember if it was the first meeting in June or second, but we went to City Council with an update on the activities to date and recommended that we spend some of the money that we have in our capital project account to hire a consultant to look at the Triangle parking lot, Front Street parking lot, and all the other public space that we have in and around that, and sort of conceptually draw out how a boatyard and a maritime museum and public parking may all fit in there, because the council, it's going to be difficult for the city to say, yes, let's move forward on dedicating this triangle lot to a boatyard, not knowing what else it can fit in there, because we already have a previous commitment to maritime museum and we have some parking needs. So I recommended and they accepted that we kind of jigsaw puzzle together and see what's going to fit in there, and gave me some money to do that with. Dana and I met today and went and kind of had a walk down around there. There's some stakes set out. I sent out earlier today to my fellow department heads to see where those came from. So far, I don't have an answer back. Either Dynegy or us put some property lines out there. I encourage you all to go out there and see, assuming that's where our lot ownership is, where these stakes are. The existing chain link fences on the northern fence, it's probably about 25 to 30 feet back from that chain link fence. And then on the eastern fence that abuts the big hill and the borrow pit, we're maybe 8 or 10 feet back. So a little less territory than we thought. But then it goes all the way out over into the street, almost to the curb. So we got that whole 25 to 30 foot section between the now cut down block wall to the street. So what we want to do is hire a consultant to come in, get our boatyard criteria, and any. And I want to meet with the ad hoc folks here over the next week as well, and I'll meet with Larry from the Maritime Museum on Friday, and put our needs list together for a consultant to come in and jigsaw puzzle and see how all these things might fit together, because the council is going to need a definitive answer on what can and can't fit conceptually before I think they can make a move on any of it. Because I think, and rightfully so, they're not going to say yes to boatyard if the boatyard is going to preclude the museum or vice versa. So I think we need to see what's going to fit. So that's my directive. We're going to start putting together a contract with our needs list and kind of ignore the trees and the walls and utilities and other things around and just look at, okay, here's your blank canvas. How will it all fit? And I'm hopeful it will. So.
Now, Eric, on a clarification is that Mayor Irons brought up what he'd like to see, and I want to make sure that we don't forget. He says, opposed to just look at the that particular lot, is that we encompass all the parking from Beach Street, the Beach Street slips, the South T Pier, and that whole parking, and kind of master plan it, because, you know, again, I think it all is encompassing, because if we do have the hall out there at South T Pier, we've got to make sure that we've got access and all that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, correct. And
okay.
And I'm glad you brought that term up. We kind of called it a mini master plan.
Right.
And Dana and I talked about this today. Assuming a boatyard is going to go in the triangle parking lot somewhere, the haul out is going to be somewhere between the South T Pier and the Shell Fuel Dock. What we would go to a consultant with is, okay, assume the haul out is going to be somewhere in that set of slips. We need to draw a path through there, likely path, and how it's going to affect the parking. So, yeah, we'll be looking at the whole package and all the public space and all the nooks and crannies we have available to maximize our usage.
All right. No, I think I was at the city council meeting, and I thought it was a positive meeting. It was a lengthy meeting, and they did give us some direction, and I think we have an opportunity if we can show that it would all work. Then the next step, of course, is to find the money to build it, and if we can do that, I think there's a good chance that this might actually happen in our lifetime.
Yeah, and I think there was good council support for continuing on. I mean, I know that the board and we've been looking for, hey, we need council to put the stamp on this and keep moving forward. And I think they put as much a stamp on as they could with this endorsement of this consultant. So I think it'll be a good next step.
I agree. Okay, any other discussion on that? Okay. Number two here. We have the update from the Capital Improvement Planning and Ag Hot Committee. Your activities there, Neil?
So we received the total cost allocation plan for the City of Morro Bay for the fiscal year 2009 through 2010. That was done by the Revenue and Cost Specialist, LLC. It's a pretty substantial document, and we intend to continue to review it and hopefully get a meeting in with Eric in between now and the next Harbor Advisory Board meeting to go over it in further detail, as well as hopefully include some other city employees, if that's possible. We don't have a ton of time between now and then, but we're going to try and get that in. Is there anything else from other members on the board?
Well, I think that, you know, what we're trying to accomplish here is just a justification of how these figures, and the figures that we're talking about is the approximately $282,000 that is subtracted from the Harbor Department's budget on a year-to-year basis. This particular figure came about And there's about 9 subcategories. And I'm just, it's a little curious of where these figures came from. That's all. So we're going to hopefully dwell into it a little bit and have some clear-cut answers. It could go, you know, both ways to the harbor. Maybe they're not charging us enough. But the point being is I think we just need to understand it a little bit more, and that's what we're trying to accomplish here with this ad hoc committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Ron?
There's an ancillary point, and that is as it relates to the city's cost allocation plan. One of the things that Neil said is key, 2010. It's now 2015. Mm-hmm. And organizational circumstances, I mean just factual organizational circumstances within the city in many, many ways have changed fairly significantly since 2010.
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, I don't think we're here tonight to discuss it. I mean, we've got some cost allocations coming from the Parks and Recs. Well, we don't have a Parks and Rec manager now. So, again, there's a lot of things that have changed here in 5 years, and maybe it's about time maybe they do a different cost allocation, you know, for 2015, 2016. But and you're very right in that respect.
That's it. Yeah, we have no recommendations at this point.
Thank you, Neil. Okay, Lynn, you're last on the agenda, but not the most important. We haven't heard from you, so thank you for taking the time. And if you could tell us what you've been up to since.
Okay, the insurance committee was appointed in order to assess the risks for the Harbor Department and how insurance could perhaps mitigate some of those exposures. We met several times. We have listed some of the risks that we can see, liability risks on the list that the members got. And we have discussed how insurance could play a part in perhaps helping the Harbor Department to mitigate these potential risks. It's very difficult to do in part because we don't know how the city insurance would play into any of these liabilities should they occur. We did get a list of incidents that happened over the previous decade, of which there were about 15. Most of those incidents, where's my numbers, involved boats that even if you required insurance, they would not have been able or perhaps could not afford to have liability insurance and cover whatever might have happened to them. They were boats that ended up being demolished at the expense of the Harbor Department. Another problem that we discussed, excuse me, was that it would, if you required insurance of boaters, it would only affect those who are on the city docks and city moorings, which is actually a rather small part of the entire population. And the others you would not be able to affect as far as requiring liability insurance from them. One of the major effects that requiring insurance might have would be better maintenance on boats because they would have to be surveyed. But that's not entirely true either, because you can buy liability insurance without covering your machinery or your hull. And so you don't necessarily have to improve your maintenance. So with all of these problems that we have encountered, we probably need, unfortunately, more information. Part of that information could come from arranging the city, a meeting with the city insurance staff, risk assessment personnel, to incorporate, to figure out, to assess the potential risks that are identified and how they could be better managed. Questions, comments?
I have a question. So your comment that the city of Morro Bay would only be able to require insurance on boats that are on city-owned facilities, why is that? I mean, is that just a law?
I don't know what influence you could have if a boat came in and dropped its anchor. How could...
I mean, they would only drop their anchor if they came into through the Harbor Department, and the Harbor Department then would have to...
I don't think they can turn away a boat. They can turn away a boat from their facilities. Can they prohibit a boat from entering the harbor?
No.
Okay. Can they require a boat that is at a different marina to buy insurance? I don't think they have that authority.
So when you say city-owned, just for clarification purposes, but like the Back Bay Marina, all those 118 slips, would we be able to require all those boat owners have insurance?
That's managed by a different department.
What's managed by Associated Pacific?
Associated Pacific.
So could we then tell Associated Pacific that they would have to have...
In that case, perhaps they could, because Associated Pacific gets its lease from the city.
Exactly. I'm just trying to understand that we could ask Marina Square, which has, you know, we...
When the lease comes up, I would guess that they could require them to get insurance. Eric would have to comment on that.
So let me throw in a few cents here. State Park Marina, it's a different animal. We have an operating agreement with State Parks, as you know. Under State Parks' concession that we are managing, boaters are required to have insurance in the State Park Marina, and APC manages that. The facilities that we have direct control over, our piers and our 50 slips and a few of our public facilities, those we would be required. We would have the ability to require insurance and other things of those vessels. Somebody at Marina Square, for example, a sublessee that's renting a building from Marina Square, yes, the lease requires those folks to have insurance, naming the city additionally insured. It does not require subletting of slips. In other words, a subletting of the land space requires sublease approval, which goes through a pretty robust review that requires insurance and everything else. The slips in all of our lease agreements do not require subleasing. They do not require sublease approval. So when Marina Square rents, you know, to a given slip holder, they're not required to fill out a consent to sublease type form. Therefore, it doesn't trigger the insurance through that. So, no, I do not believe that we can just unilaterally say, hey, Marina Square, your boats all have to have insurance. Because they're a customer of Marina Square, and Marina Square is controlling that lease site and that water. And if it's not in the master lease, no, we can't just unilaterally go in and say Marina Square's boats have to have insurance.
But Marina Square, it can on their own require insurance.
Yes.
But the Harbor Department cannot influence Marina Square to require the insurance.
So, you know, I mean, this whole insurance thing is been brought about primarily on the risk that could happen to the city of Morro Bay if something did happen. I mean, insurance is a necessary evil, unfortunately. In my case, as a homeowner and a property owner and something like that. And isn't that what our intent is that we want to make sure that the risk to the city of Morro Bay is at least negated as best as possible? Is that our intent, Lynn?
That's what they were asking for, yes.
All right.
To see if that would work.
Right.
And the committee in discussing this, how would it work, and would it work at all? Partially, we went through the history. In the history, there were, 15 incidents. Seven of those were had pollution involved, and most liability insurance does include pollution, so some of that might be covered. Only 4 out of the 15 incidents actually had an insured vessel involved. The 5 of the vessels that were involved were set for to be demolished. So that leaves not a large effect if you even wanted to require insurance from those few boats that you can influence.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for Lynn's report?
I've got a comment.
Yeah, Joe, you as a commercial fisherman, I mean, not asking you whether you have insurance or not, that's not my intent, but your whole concept on it. I mean, you know.
Okay. The insurance thing is fantastic. I love being able to have insurance. I've got a fairly new solid fiberglass boat that makes that easy to do. My problem with requiring everybody to have insurance comes from previously having a wooden boat. That was a great wood boat. It was a fantastic boat. And, I mean, I'd take that thing anywhere. Uninsurable. Could not get it. I tried all the places that commercial fishermen go. I even tried to go through frickin' like Geico. And because they say they do boats, but I could get nothing from anybody, and it can get accepted into the pools, into insurance pools. The commercial fishermen have the United Trawlers Fund, and then there is another one that I can't really remember, and it's an insurance pool. I can't remember the name of it. And I couldn't get accepted into either one of those specifically because it was a wood boat and because it was a wood boat that was new to me. So I see that being a problem, especially with trying to encourage future generations of commercial fishermen. A lot of times a young guy, that's all he can afford is an old wood boat with maybe a salmon permit on it, and he gets a start. You know, everything has gotten so expensive that that's pretty much one of the main options for a young person to get into commercial fishing, into fisheries. So that's kind of my opinion on it there.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Ron?
As Lynn is the chair of the committee stated, the committee's next approach is to take this list of potential risks and to try to determine by involving city staff, the risk assessment city staff, as well as risk assessment personnel from the California Joint Powers Insurance Association, through which the city gets its insurance, and to go through these lists of potential risks and see what's covered and what might be left. And maybe they're all covered, and maybe they're not. That's the next thing to do, and then if there are risks that the committee has identified which are not covered, then that's the time to think next about what, if anything, could be done about that.
Thank you. Okay. I understand. It's a great report. Any other comments? Hearing none. There's really nothing else. This is a special meeting, so do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Here, second. Okay, I have a motion to adjourn. I have a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye. Thank you.